Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Today, there is five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, an airman was beating his meat in his dorm room while his first sergeant, who happened to be a lady, walked in for a surprise inspection. They locked eyes, went their separate ways, and then each posted to Reddit. We're going to tell you those stories in just a little bit. Round number two, West Point graduate and offensive lineman Brett Toth just signed a contract with the Philadelphia Eagles in a huge shift towards allowing service members to play pro sports. Round number three, the military burned millions, probably billions of tons of trash in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it turns out that probably wasn't the best idea, which surprises nobody. And round number four, the new skipper of an aircraft carrier, Harry S. Truman, Captain Kavan Hakimzada, I think I said that right, fled at Iran whenever he was 11 and could return to the area with a big fucking boat. And round number five, President Trump wants to buy Greenland and all its shitty weather too. We have some suggestions instead of Greenland because it turns out Greenland's actually not for sale. And all of that is going to be presented by our friends at Starbucks. Starbucks has hired 25,000 military veterans and their spouses over the last few years. They have smashed their hiring goals and they're keeping on going. They also have 65 military family stores all throughout the country. Those will all be opened up by September and they're going to keep on opening more of those as well. One of the shocking things about Starbucks to me is that so we had this ad deal. I'll give you a little bit behind the scenes of the ad deal. They said that they wanted us to talk about the military, the Starbucks military community page on Facebook. And at first, like many of you listening, I rolled my eyes. I was like, oh God, Facebook, this is going to be an absolute cluster. Well, I actually went and joined it to check it out to see what it was about because we're going to have to talk about it. And it is surprisingly great people on there. Like, it not really surprising because it is a Starbucks military community, a lot of, but you know, Facebook and the reputation
it has now. Especially military Facebook groups tend to be. So I did the same and I was delightfully surprised. Very helpful information in there. A lot of people helping each other out. Very cool.
And it wasn't just like a corporate thing where it's like, hey, check out this latte I got. All right, going to work. It was like legitimate people telling their stories. There was one, there's a mom who is a barista. I forget where it was at, but she spotted her son. Like, so you know, whenever you go through boot camp, now they have like the PAOs will snap pictures of random recruits. They don't say who it is or what it is, but they'll just snap a random picture of a recruit, put it online, and like the moms and dads can go through all these different thousands of pictures from boot camp that are posted every day. And occasionally you'll find a little nugget with your little troop on there. And the mom found her. She's like, I finally found my Jimmy on there. She was just so happy. Scrolling Facebook and finding those happy moments doesn't happen often, but it happens on the Starbucks military community. So go and check that out. It's a pretty cool thing. You can see where people are getting jobs and they post tips on how to get hired if you're looking for a job, how to use their benefits and all kinds of different stuff. And they post some decent little pictures too. So make sure you check that out. Let's get started with the show. All right, so I want to address a little bit of elephant in the room before we really get going with the show. If you guys follow along on social media, most of you probably don't. And I think that that is one of the predominant features that I've learned about being at Barstool over the last couple of years is that because we are all so extremely online that we think that everyone else in the world is extremely online too. And what's happening on Twitter, what's happening on Facebook, what's happening on Instagram is a microcosm of what's happening in life. And I don't think that that's the case. And this is just another one of those examples coming up. Yes, Kate.
Yeah, it turns out that most of our listeners have lives, which what's that like? I don't know.
Yeah, so sure, if you're just hanging out in your cube or if you're driving to work or you're doing whatever, I'll give you a little background. So at Barstool, we have 250 employees now. Whenever I first got hired, I was employee number 21, and that was 3 years ago. So it gives you an idea of the growth that has happened at Barstool over the last couple of years. Now, I want to preface all this by saying Barstool is a weird animal online and in different communities because it's almost assumed that if one person at Barstool believes a certain way, that everyone views it in a hive mind and we all agree with each other. We all have the same thoughts. We all have the same principles. We all have the same deep-seated issues or philosophical like tendencies. And that's just not the case. You don't see that with other places. If somebody from ESPN says something, you don't assume that everybody at ESPN believes this way. If somebody at CNN says something you don't believe, well, that might not be a great example.
I got food poisoning. I got severe diarrhea from an Applebee's many like years
every,
ago.
Well, that, but again, might not be a great example, especially if you're doing the endless shrimp. But right, that being said, Kurt Minahan's show, they do a little more investigative type stuff, which is typically not what Barstool really does, unless there's a humorous undertone to it. This, they have an ongoing beef with an NFL writer and radio host named Benjamin Albright, who works out of Denver and has broken news stories, and he's just like a Twitter dude. Well, some people don't like Ben, some people do. Like, he is very much like a linchpin kind of guy, like where you either love him or you hate him, and that's just the kind of way that it is. And a lot of people have been talking about some parts of his story don't seem to add up. He got into a beef because he said that Barstool, like, he's not a big Barstool fan, which is fine. Like, if you're not a Barstool fan, there's, I mean, if we did a hit piece on everybody who's not a Barstool fan, like, that's all our company would do for the rest of time. Like, we just don't do that. So Minahan's show, they wanted to dig into some of Ben's story. Like, did he really deploy several times like Ben had claimed? I don't really want to get into the weeds about what the story is about, because ultimately my opinion on this is I don't give a fuck. Like, that is my ultimate opinion, is that if somebody has these stories out there, I don't care, man. Like, I've talked, even if Ben, if he didn't serve a day in Iraq, which now he's posted documents that he has, that he very clearly did. But if he didn't, I'm still under the assumption, and I've said it many times, I don't care about stolen valor unless you are defrauding people, you're defrauding the government, and you're being an absolute asshole about it. And you're taking away something else from another veteran who deserves it. Like, if you get the last spot in school because it's supposed to go to a disabled veteran and you're claiming to be a disabled veteran, then yes, I think that's messed up. Other than that, I am wholly unconcerned with stolen valor stories. I mean, how do you guys feel about it?
Also, too, just wild move to email him and be like, it was almost like in a blackmail-y kind of way, the way that Kirk Show did it, that I really just didn't like. Like, hey, we're looking into your background and we looked into the Army records and we don't think you served the way you said you did. Like, don't ever do that to a veteran. And if anybody ever does that to you as a veteran, you don't owe anybody anything. You know what you did. You should never have to prove yourself to anybody who tries to make you feel like you didn't do something that you did. That feeling is just so ugly to me, and I just really hated that.
Like, Cons, what would you have done at the first episode of ZBT that we were on together if I said, hey, you know what? I see that your name's Captain Cons on here. I see that you have West Point in your bio. You need to send me over a copy of your DD-214 before you come on the show.
Well, I guess I don't know how I would feel, but I guess overall I would have said to you, I'm sorry, is my word not good enough? Because at that point I hadn't proved to you that my word wasn't good enough. I think where this gentleman runs into a problem is that there have been some other stories where some of the details have been found out that they are not completely true. And ultimately, if he feels the need to run around and tell these stories about his education, about his military service, then there's clearly something going on with that guy. And honestly, I didn't know him from Adam until this whole thing came out.
But still, like, fuck ever asking somebody or like, well, that's, I didn't serve. Like, well,
that was the point I was going to make, was ultimately I don't care if he really feels the need to prop himself up and say those things. then that's his own issue. And that ultimately doesn't affect me in any way. And he's the one at the end of the day that has to live with the words and the tweets that he puts out there. So if it is found out that he is not being 100% accurate, well, then that's for him to make amends with and to come to grips with. It's not for us to go run around being people that try to highlight people who are lying.
I do like how they also were like insinuating that every single DD214 is the same. Do you realize they're fucking put together by a Lance Corporal in your S1 shop?
Right.
It's not like some high level dude is putting that shit together. It's some fucking boot. Like, that's the reason why there's no sentence or structure. I don't even know if mine says a deployment on it. Like, does yours say deployment? I think it says like foreign service time or something.
I forget
like
what it says specifically, but it has my year in Iraq, yeah.
But mine is like four, I think on mine it's like 4.5 years foreign service time because I spent nearly 4 years in Okinawa.
Oh, Okinawa too, yeah.
And then so I have the Iraq deployment and Okinawa. Like, you can't just asking a DD214, and one last thing about that, like saying I reached out to Army. Like, this isn't...
Mother, these are my awards from Army.
I reached out to Army, one PAO. Did you have the social security number, dude? Because that's how they file things away. I doubt he DM'd it to you.
Right. That's such a great point that, you know, there's some lower enlisted dude putting these DD214s together. I definitely, you know, I have video and picture evidence from one of my award ceremonies where I was receiving something. It's not on my DD214. It's just missing. I know I earned the award, but it's just not on the DD14. So if I handed that to someone and say, oh, I had this, they'd be like, well, it's not on your DD214. So no, you didn't.
Yep. Like on mine, you know, like whenever you have a Valor device, it's supposed to say it on the DD214, mm-hmm. like whatever award it is with V, like with Combat V on it. My DD214 does not have the V on it, but my award summary page does. And I have like the actual write up for it. Like, it's, you can't just go by that because those, no one cares about that like document. Like, they want you to get out of the military. You don't check it out. You're not going back. Once they hand it to you, it could say you never served a day in your life. If you have the DD214 in your hand, you're running off the base because you're just glad to get the fuck out. And the issue that I want to really highlight is that I am wholly unconcerned about what Ben Albright says or does on Twitter. Like, that's not my concern at all. My concern, the only reason why I'm bringing it up on ZBT is because ZBT does represent Barstool. We are the military voice of Barstool Sports. And for anybody else getting in that realm, that's like jumping into my fucking pool. Don't jump into my pool and make waves in the pool that I've built without speaking to me about it first.
So that's the other thing. I think I don't really know these guys. I mean, I've DM'd a little bit with Kirk and I was impressed when he first joined his willingness to talk about his mental health. And obviously that's a topic that we care deeply about. So I was like, oh, that's great. We're going to have another person using their platform to better the stigma against mental health. But if you want to go after someone about their military service, maybe check in with one of us and say like, hey, is there a way to do this or should I not do this? Maybe lean on us a little bit, because I guess the one guy, the producer, his brother is a veteran, so maybe he felt like he had the right to do that. Either way, I wish they would have come to us first, as we are the face of the Barstool military arm.
I just wish they never looked into it in the first place.
I think it's really short-sighted for people that are that experienced in like media and podcasting and radio and shit like that. You are what the screenshot in the tweet says you are. Like, the way that you are going to perceive is going to be the way that you're perceived from that email and that email alone. And the idea that this is part of a larger story, that bears no weight in my mind, because that's not the way that it's going to be interpreted across social media. And that is the same shit that happened with Starbucks. It's one story, one meme, and all of a sudden Starbucks hates fucking the military, when in fact they've done shit over the last decade and more that proves that they don't. The same thing could happen to us, because you are associated with Barstool Sports. The way that you went around that email was completely fucked up, and it could tarnish the reputation of what we built. That's really all I want to say about it. Like, they wanted me to come on their show and do all this kind of shit. I'm not that person. And I think that anybody who's listened to 195 episodes of this show, read me or followed me over the years, knows that that's not who I am. I'm not going to get in fucking Twitter wars and Twitter battles and back and forth and shit like that. I'm just not going to do it. All right, let's actually move on with the real show. Bertie Higgins, Bryn. Honey, I was your hero, and you were my leading lady.
we had it all. Just like Bogey and Bacall, starring in our own late, late show, sailing away to Key Largo. Here's looking at you, kid.
It's time to talk about coming, folks. Let's get into round one. So our social media guy, Kyle, put this out, and he's like, hey, if you guys want to mention this in a saved round, no, my friend, this goes straight to round number one. I'm going to go ahead and read the response of the airman. Kate, if you want to have the second one and the voice of the first sergeant, you want to take the first sergeant role in this?
Yes, I do.
All right. So the first one says, so I just had what I assumed to be a surprise dorm inspection, and my first sergeant saw me jerking it. I didn't hear the knock on the door because I had my headphones on full blast. She quickly shut the door, obviously disgusted. Now what? Question mark.
And 2 hours later, this is another post to Reddit that followed up on that. Just did a surprise room inspection. I am a first sergeant and did my first ever surprise room inspection. As a female, it gets a bit weird going into my young male's rooms, but it's part of the job. Today, I walked in on one of my airmen masturbating. He was going at it. There was a brief moment where he and I made eye contact. He froze, his 4-inch in his hand.
And shot.
And as quickly as it happened, it ended. I rolled my eyes and shut the door as he fumbled to hide under the sheets. So the question is, do I bring this up or do I let it be?
Cons, we'll start with you.
Number one, that was very rude and unnecessary to throw in the 4-inch comment.
Unbelievable.
Completely unnecessary.
Terrible leadership.
Unnecessary. But I mean, I think this is just the cost of doing business. That, you know, he's not doing anything wrong. He's in the privacy of his own dorm room, as the Air Force likes to call it. So she should, I maybe have a different approach when knocking on the door. If you don't hear anyone say enter,
oh, no, because she probably thinks he's gone. As you, have you ever done a room inspection, Cons?
Sure. Yeah, sure. If you don't hear anything, yeah, you just go in, sure.
So okay. If you knock twice, you knock again, you open up, and you say, hey, coming in, bitch.
Right.
And then if they're under there and they have their headphones on, which, full volume, this little airman needs fucking counseling, honestly. Yeah. Yeah. Full volume in a joint facility, never a great idea. You got to go just loud enough where you can barely hear it, right, Kate?
You got to say, I got to say too, people get weird as hell. And you think, oh, the barracks, they have roommates all the time. I was in certain barracks rooms that had two bunks in, so four people in one little like dorm room, essentially, kind of thing. And people, you know, you don't stop being a sexual being just because you're crammed in like a sardine in a can. I had one roommate who very openly just kept out this giant purple dildo with the butt attachment on it. And like, just very casually, like zero. This is the same one who tried to hide a rabbit, live rabbit, in her footlocker. But
I
also
wish you would say her name. I need to know. We need to name her. I think she needs to be referenced more so on this show than she currently is.
We'll call her PFC Mary.
PFC Mary
got
Mary,
down.
Did you know?
And she like was just a sexual lady, and like you'd be lying in the night, and on the other side of the room you'd just be like, you're like, oh my god, tell me now. You like really did not care. And then one of the guys in our unit, he's like, my roommate keeps leaving his like wall locker thing open on the weekends when he leaves. He's like not locking it. And it's open right now. There was nipple clamps, a butt plug, and a couple other things out in the room. And so a bunch of the guys had been drinking in that room. It was like a weekend. And I come upstairs. I lived my dorm. Oh, my God. The Air Force is getting in my head. My barracks is on the first floor. I walk up to hang out with them. And two of the guys are attached by their nipples, like just sipping beers. Like, hey, we found so-and-so's nipple clamps. Like, oh, my God. Like, but people, you know, people are going
to – listen. There's no way, obviously, to prepare for a surprise inspection. But if you know that this is the activity that you're going to engage in with full-on noise-canceling headphones, and you will – because, I mean, aside from her, what if somebody else just walked in randomly, one of your buddies? You don't want anyone to walk in while you're doing
that. There is not a barracks or dorm in the United States government that can't be broken into with an honor, courage, commitment card.
This is true.
But you are in there. There is no locks. Did you abide by a lock rule for somebody else's dorm, or barracks? Would you just go in, Kate?
I always knocked, as a woman, for sure, because of this exact thing right here. I'm sure there was like constant fapping. And you drive by any barracks in the country and you can look at the building and go, for sure someone's fapping it in there right now at any given time.
Because I think that there's this, for me, it was always like if my buddies that lived in the barracks, if I wanted to go in, I knew, do they have two roommates? If they had two roommates, I automatically just walked in. If somebody's living by themselves, I think that you knock because you never know what they're getting right into. But if they're just a couple folks hanging out, just fucking go in.
So when I was in school, and as opposed to doing homework at night or anything that was going to further my academic career, I would just bounce around and visit buddies in their rooms and go.
I thought you're going to say jerked off with full volume headphones.
No, just shoot the bull with everybody. And I always knew if the door was chained, because the doors would never be locked, but if it was chained and I, you know, you could only open it that first few inches, then I knew like, ooh, all right, don't want to disturb. I'll come back later.
You know, honestly, what? Go ahead, Kate.
It should be like the Barstool radio room when the light's on, you know, that they're on air, so be quiet or whatever. Like, there should just, like, just own up to it. If the light's on outside this barracks room, don't come in.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you do have, like, the sock rule, like, on the doorknob and things like that. But I think that we should be smarter than that as a military. Over the last 200 years, we've learned some things. I think that each barracks or dorm or whatever you want to call it should come with one of those do not disturb things, like at the hotel, where instead of it says do not disturb, you just put it out there and it just says horny on one side.
Yeah, I like that.
You flip it, or red and green, whatever color you want to use. I think that's the way it should go. But the first sergeant, she's got to ignore it. Got to.
I would just never speak of it ever again.
Now, if you're, I think it's because you, well, that actually might be a sexist take by me, because I would definitely, if I was the first sergeant, I would definitely bring it up. Be like, you nasty little thing beating the shit.
Well, but also too, you gotta maintain the order of the chain of command. You could tell, you know, your peers, but you definitely can't let anybody else below you know these sorts of things. But yeah.
What I would do just to fuck with them though, this, and you could get away with this. I would call him out in the middle of formation, like right after it happened, not say anything to anyone ever, bring him out in front of formation and just make up some like meritorious little letter of appreciation to give him for like having a tidy room or something like that. Just so he knows, you know, and we're never going to talk about this again, but you'll have this little certificate that you'll always feel uncomfortable every time you get. And it'll go in your permanent record. So whenever you get out, it'll be on your DD-214 having a letter of appreciation for beating your
I will say that reading this thread, like I feel like the same poster just made this up. And like,
oh, yeah, it's definitely.
Obviously, because the 4-inch in his hand. But I do feel like it was worth talking about because like you become a MacGyver because you're constantly around other people. You're in the field for months at a time. You're deployed for months at a time. You're living in tents with several other men or women or whatever. And like, if ever there was like the Jason Bournes of masturbation, it's military members. They just really can figure out, you know, if you can survive in a 200 degree porta potty just to get it on.
Never trust somebody who has a gas mask right by their bed. That's all I'll say.
Oh, why? What does that mean?
Autoerotic asphyxiation. Ever heard of it? Let's move on to round two.
Okay.
That last round is obviously brought to you by our friends at Roman Swipes. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, in fact, acting, and we don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipe packet is small enough to hide in your wallet or whenever you need it. Swipes are great, and they will not transfer to your partner so that you can last longer without worrying. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. When you go to getroman.com/zero, you get your first month of swipes for just $5. When you choose a monthly plan, if you go to the link getroman.com/zero, that's getroman.com/zero. Let's
swipe that dick.
Excellent point, Kate. All right, let's move on to round number two. Cons, you got the cog on this one.
All right, round number two. Big news. The U.S. Army signed an exception to regulations this past Thursday night, that would allow Brett Toth, a 2018 graduate of the United States Military Academy, to join a professional football team rather than fully complete the military service required after his graduation. Toth, he played 31 games for Army as an offensive lineman before he graduated and became an engineer officer. He's currently a second lieutenant and has been on active service since he graduated May 2018. Under the Army rules, Toth was obligated to serve at least one more year on active duty and then would be eligible to join the reserves to serve an additional 3 years of his minimal service obligation. McCarthy's action would be limited solely to Toth as a one-time exception, and Defense Department policy established by Mattis required military personnel to fulfill their service obligations before they played professional sports.
So basically, he went to West Point, he played football. The NFL wanted him, but they're like, no, there's this rule. You got to complete so much time service. But then they're like, never mind, we're making an exception for you. So you can join the fly, Eagles fly on the road to victory.
Honestly, you could easily make the argument that the Eagles are the most pro-military football team in the NFL because they were the ones who gave Alejandro Villanueva his first shot, too, as a tight end.
Yeah. I was going to say that. I think part of the reason the Eagles made this move is because they said, crap, now it's Villanueva is – obviously, he was a Pro Bowler. He's one of the best offensive tackles.
All pro.
They're like, all right, we don't want to make the same mistake twice. Let's pick up this Toth kid. And yeah, Brett Toth, this isn't some charity case. You know, he was in the Senior Bowl. He was in AP All Bowl team his senior year. He went to the combine, got invited to the combine, couldn't go because of an injury, had his pro day, showed out on his pro day. Had he not gone to West Point, this kid gets drafted hands down without question. He's legitimate. Very good football player. So I'm really excited to see.
And the NFL doesn't do that. I mean, the NFL they have 90 roster spots at this point. Every roster spot matters. Like they want to have people in uniform that have a possibility of making the team, or you're a camp arm or camp leg. Like that's just the way it goes when in the NFL. Like you just don't have that. I want to point out one thing about Toth because it's going way underreported. This dude got out like after doing the Senior Bowl, had to get down inside the height and weight standards to go on active duty Army. After that was all over, he gets this contract, he gets this waiver. He has to go back up to his original weight. And I would guess from his playing weight of what he was allowed to play at West Point, he's got to gain another 30, 40 pounds.
Oh my God, that's the dream, isn't it? To be like, if tomorrow Dave Portnoy was like, Kate, you got to gain 40 fucking pounds by next month that you're out. I'd be like,
but you'd be like bastard on,
I would.
On Austin Powers because you eating that much would make you miserable. I think that there are certain things where you have like loose standards, but how many fucking hoagies from Wawa can one dude eat to gain that extra weight back?
He's in the right city.
Remember when we talked to Villanueva, he said that he played at like 255, 260, at 345 now.
Yeah. You need that size to compete with the strength of the defensive lineman in the NFL. He's right now, they said going into camp, he was 6'6", 290. He wants to get up to 315. I think he played at about 300, 305. So 315 is not a ridiculous number, but still in a short amount of time, that is a lot of weight to gain. And he even mentioned
a good weight.
Right. Yeah. You could just get fat, but no, you have to put on the correct type of weight.
It's totally fine to have to suck it up and gain some weight when – what does a lieutenant normally make, Cons?
Like 42K a year.
And now for the 2019 season, players signed to the NFL team's practice squads earn a minimum of $8,000 per week or $136,000 for the 17-week season. And the minimum salary for an undrafted rookie with an active roster spot, $500,000. Half a million. So he is doing fine. He can suck it up and eat a couple hoagies over at the Wawa. He's going to be all right, man.
And the quote from Toth that I think is important about this, and we've said this before, again, it's going to be a huge advertising tool for the Army, and that is what I am here for, kind of representing West Point and the Army as a whole. He was very adamant, he said, to his command, to his company commander, to his battalion commander, say, hey, I'm here to serve the Army. If things change, we'll look at it then. But he was very much all about serving in the Army. But now, obviously, this was presented to him. But I think he has the right attitude. This is a great tool for the Army as a whole.
The new Army commercial is going to be like, do you want to make $500,000 a year? Join the U.S. Army. Like, there's going to be zero context.
I do love the politicization of like issues like this where like, finally, President Trump is sticking up for our troops. Like, even though he was the one that enacted the executive order of what goes on, like, because they did have the waiver, Mattis took it away, and now it's back, like all within the same time, like all within the same 4-year administration. Like, it's just, everything is so political and people have such a short memory span. They're like, man, this should have been around forever. Well, it was, and then it wasn't, and it was, and it was. It goes back and forth, right, Cons? I mean, yes. It's probably since you went to West Point, the policy has probably changed no less than five times.
I was going to say three or four times. It's honestly, people ask me like, oh, so what's the deal? And I've often had to say, you know what? It changes so much. I honestly don't know what the deal is anymore. Because then you got guys like Joe Cardona for the Patriots who I don't think he had ever had any sort of issue. He's been serving the whole time and he went right to the Patriots. So it's been weird. I think they just need to once and for all have a clear cut policy. And it's looking like it's going to go that direction.
You know what they should do? They should say anybody can get drafted, but if they play for the Eagles or they play for an NFL team, the nameplate on the jersey has to be the recruiting website. And then I think you would always have it.
GoArmy.com. Yeah. GoArmy.com, just with an amazing tackle right there.
Yeah. Who was the – I'm blanking on the name. He was in the Air Force, played for the Cowboys for many years, chaps. Chad Healy or – oh, gosh.
Ocho Cinco.
No.
Linebacker?
Chad Henne. Yeah, he was a lineman, Chad Henne. And every time
– Chad Henne was a quarterback.
Hold on. Come on. Help me out.
Learn a little sports sometime, idiot.
Yeah, Barstool Sports.
Sports. Emphasis on the sports.
At any rate, they mentioned he was in the Air Force every time the guy played. So I think it's a great tool for the
Army. They did the same thing with David Robinson.
Right. I mean, obviously, and then it just carried with him even in his nickname, the Admiral.
Honestly, we should do a deep dive, talk about stolen valor at the top of the show. We should get into it with David Robinson, calling himself the Admiral.
Ooh,
that's a lot of lieutenant. Rank. Wow. Barely a lieutenant.
And it was Chad Hennings. Sorry, yeah. Chad Hennings.
I was going to tell you that, but I want you to look it up for yourself.
Yeah. Well, this is a great story.
You learn more when you do your own research. Excellent point, Kate.
Yeah. he's a great kid, so I wish him the best of luck. Hopefully it turns out that he makes it.
I am surprised that you didn't say, this guy that graduated from my alma mater is a piece of shit. Yeah. All right, let's move on to round three.
No Bears! All right, gang, round three. Grab those gas masks, but not to beat your meat or any erotic asphyxiation or whatever you want to call it. We're talking bad air, real bad air. Over 1.5 million American troops were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan between 2001 and 2011, and many returned with visible scars of war, but for some, their injuries hidden. At many bases throughout those regions, waste materials were disposed of in so-called burn pits. And you breathe in those fumes. Those pits burn 24/7. I know from my first deployment, there were times that I was just separated by a mud wall from a burn pit, like literally less than 5 feet from me that I slept next to every single night. And you're throwing your bags of shit in there. You're throwing plastic, whatever the Afghan army or Afghan police wants to throw in there, which was sometimes things that would explode in their own rounds and their own like shit they didn't want to carry around.
You can't blame somebody. If there's a fire, you've got to throw in anything. You just got to see what happens. A paint can doesn't matter. Let's just throw it in there. Let's see what happens.
I'm a big time pyromaniac too. Self-admitted. I love fires.
What's your before we keep going, what's your favorite thing to burn?
Honestly, the best thing I've burned recently is always, 30 rack, the container for a 30 rack, because it just the flame goes up so high so quickly and it burns very well. It obviously doesn't last very long, but those are usually abundant around my house.
I once put an entire full untouched roll of toilet paper, like I unwrapped it, but then I put it right on top of a fire and watched it burn, and it was just a delight.
Mm-hmm. My favorite's always Christmas wrappers because there's so much. It'll like have the different colors and everything. Kate, I honestly God thought you were going to say your car.
I did not set my car on fire yet. Yet is the key word.
There you go. All right, continue the story.
A lot of less fun stuff going into these burn pits, and I'm sure you guys have seen it too. I remember seeing guys at different the tiny outposts sitting in like beach chairs next to the pit, and they're like, my job's to watch the pit. Like, they're just in the smoke. But I mean, my first tour, it was like the smell of the deployment was that burning smell. And there was so many toxic chemicals in it that we were all breathing in just constantly.
And if you haven't seen Jarhead, it's perfect. Like, that's exactly what it is. You're putting diesel flue on shit. You're stirring the shit soaked diesel flue that's burning while some commander needs to go take a shit and you put it over there. I'm not walking across the whole base just to take my morning glory, Swofford.
Right. And so batteries, chemicals, heavy metals, arsenic, all this stuff, plus the dust from the dust storms often had toxic stuff in them and bad stuff. So, the problem is, and they've openly said now, we admit that this air like definitely makes people sick. It puts people at further risk for potentially harmful, all sorts of harmful stuff. But there was a report that came out that said millions of dollars were spent on incinerators to properly dispose of waste, than ways that would not get us sick and would not create this super toxic smoke, but that they usually sat idly by next to the burn pits.
That was
classic military, right?
There had to have been some reason. The burn pit must have obviously just been a lot easier. The incinerators probably
opening. But like, yeah, it's easier, but
I blame dumbass E8s for this because the mass sergeant doesn't know how to fucking work it. So he doesn't know how to explain it to the staff sergeant. So then the private has to do it. Then the sergeant comes out and like, fuck it, dude, just figure it out. Burn everything. And so he's like, roger that. So he just makes a big pit and burns stuff next to this $1 million machine.
Yeah. Well, people have compared it to Vietnam now, to our age. It's like the Agent Orange of our generation and what we're the poison really that we were dealt with from our own, by our own government overseas on these deployments. So there's a voluntary burn pit registry that if you just go on Google, people are like, well, what's the link? Fucking Google it, guys. Come on. Google burn pit registry. You'll find it.
Kate's randomly triggered about asking for information.
I get so many people that are like, hey, Kate, what's that one? And I'm like, I know you know you could Google that.
The irony of Kate getting upset about technological problems, not lost on me.
Excellent point, Brett.
That is a good point. Roast me like a burn pit, fam. But the VA has a voluntary burn pit registry. Almost 200,000 veterans have signed up for it. But of the 12,000 claims actually filed to the VA connected to burn pits, only about 2,500 have been accepted. And a victim's lawsuit against contractors who oversaw some of the pits was rejected by the Supreme Court. So right now, it's kind of an uphill battle. I say just if you were around one, just register. And maybe the more people registering, the more info we can get, the more momentum we can get going towards people who really
burn pits and earplugs. That's your moneymaker.
Oh, man. If I see that commercial one more time, I'm butt plugs.
I'm a plaintiff in that.
Are you?
Yeah.
I wouldn't talk about it, Con.
Oh.
If we see you in a driving a Beamer with a fur coat on, we'll know it went well.
You should get it, and if you do, your vanity license plate and jersey should just say earplugs. Or no, that wouldn't fit. You could say ear pro. Like that would fit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Ear pro it up.
Would definitely fix.
Sucks for anybody suffering from things like this. Sometimes I feel like I'm like, man, I was exposed to these burn pits all the time in my lungs, but I also rip cigs all day long. So it's kind of a...
That's probably part of the register. Right. They're going to ask like, oh, well, do you also smoke tobacco? And if you say yes, well they're just going to pin it on that and you're not going to get your lawsuit taken care of.
I imagine the VA in like 10 years is going to be like that bar in Zoolander where you just have some PFC who didn't do anything like, I got the black lung pop.
I'm a merman.
Merman. All right, let's move on to round 4.
I think I'm getting the black lung pop. It's not very well ventilated down there.
Round number 4 is brought to you by our friends at Rob Rodney, because I think this is my all-time favorite Big Brain pitches. If you guys didn't watch, did you watch Big Brain, all of you?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Rob Rodney had a beautiful one.
It was beautiful because he has this little – explain what it is, Kate, because you actually use it.
I do. It's a beautiful – it's customized cases for your marijuana needs. And basically, there's these beautiful leather bags. You kind of design them yourself. They come with all the jars and all the little knickknacks inside. You kind of pick it out. You design it yourself. And they're TSA approved. There's double locks. I have one with two double locks on it. And they're just really beautiful cases. You don't look at it and think like, oh, it's kind of a discreet bag. Anything could be in it. It's just a good looking like little thing. And I just, yeah, I'm a big fan.
There you go. And if you want to become a big fan too and buy your own, you can go to robrobney.com/ZBT. The bag started just $99 and they're giving listeners a 10% discount with the promo code ZBT10. And they're still giving away a portion of the proceeds to Veterans Cannabis Project, which is a nonprofit started by a Navy SEAL. So make sure that you go to robrobney.com/ZBT with the promo code ZBT10 for 10% off. Let's move into round number 4. All right, round number 4, Captain Kavan Hakimizade. I took.
Oh, we are
last.
It's tough, guys. Like you know me. I want to like do everything above board, but some names are just fucking hard. I'm used to Roger and Steve. Like that's fact of the matter. That's a tough name for me. You guys want to give it a try?
Hakeem Zadeh.
Kate.
Hakeem Zadeh.
Hakeem Zadeh.
Hakeem Zadeh.
It's one of those correct pronunciation. He took command of the aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman in July, achieving a goal he set out for himself 30 years ago after he first laid eyes on a flat top in Norfolk. Back then, he was a young sailor who had joined the Navy straight out of high school to serve in a country, and he had lived in served the country that he had lived in for about a decade. This story comes to us courtesy of the Navy Times, by the way. He was born in Texas to an American mother and an Iranian father, but moved to Iran whenever he was just a baby. He finally remembers his childhood there during the 1970s. So this story goes on to say that he and his family were forced to flee America when he was just 11 and his sister was 9 and his mother was 7 months pregnant. They were rushed into an airport, was about to close.
It was very Argo-like. It was during the Islamic Revolution of 1979, mm-hmm. and people had just days to get the fuck out of there, and things were really going haywire, and he describes it almost like Argo, the way they had to like get the fuck out of the country and get snuck out of there as fast as they could as things fell apart. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, so he said the weeks leading up to their departure were very much like the opening scenes of Argo, which is based on the true story of the CIA's effort to rescue 6 Americans who were hiding in a Canadian embassy after the revolution. While the Navy doesn't disclose where its ships plan to go or when to go, aircraft carriers are frequently used in a highly visible deterrent when tensions flare up around the world. I mean, we talked about that when we had Kinziger on. Whenever everything was going on with Venezuela, they were like, we'll just send like a Mew or a fleet. Because once you see one of the big bitches floating by your waters, you're like, whoa, whoa.
This is serious.
Well, you know what? I love the thought of like going back to my high school reunion someday, but in a really fancy car. Do you think he feels like, look at me pulling up in a fucking Navy ship?
Oh, he definitely like open valve systems, you know, that's supposed to be like for if there's like a hurricane force wind coming, they probably have it like, they see me rolling. Then whenever you're going by. And I want to say another Navy story. They used to have the touch screens like to make the ships speed up or slow down. They had like this touch screen pad, almost like an iPad. They got rid of it and went back to the old joystick model.
Because love a good joystick.
They just kept fucking up. Like, they just did.
Well, I guess, was that part of the reason they kept crashing?
Yes. It 100% was.
Wow, okay.
I also want to say, though, about this officer going back to that area, you know, it has to be kind of a, you come to this country, you're only here 10 years, and then you dedicate the whole rest of your life to serving this country, which is an incredible thing on its own. But then to have to go back, people were wondering, for this officer, did it cause him any angst? Did he feel conflicted having to go back there in a war type posture maybe, but he said that there's no particular angst involved. I've deployed there multiple times in the past to the Middle East, and this is just part of his duty pretty much. So I just thought pretty interesting little human interest piece that a lot of people were interested in seeing that this person came to the United States and is kind of going back to where he came from, but on behalf of the United States. So
yeah,
but please. let me get you guys' opinion. And I think this story is fantastic. If he was born in Texas and then went to Iran where his father was from, spent about a decade there, and then had to flee back to America, do you think he claims America as his home or Iran as his home?
I would say probably both. I mean, knowing people who are Iranian Americans, I would say both. I think that whenever you have that split culture, like I think that both are probably very, very valuable to who he is as a person. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we don't want to speak on his behalf, but I think you would certainly value both sides of your heritage.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Well, good on him. I hope he has a great song to roll up to. Like you mentioned.
Obviously, and if he's a Navy captain that's captaining a big old ship like the Truman, he's a successful dude. And he also earned the Bronze Star in Legion of Merit. So a successful military guy as well.
Oh yeah.
Shout out to Cons for having a Bronze Star too.
Thanks.
You're All right, let's move on to round 5. All right, this is just a quick little story. I just found it really interesting. I like the picture, like high level people in government. I mean, the president included, sitting around in the Oval Office. They probably have like a cigar rolling around. We know the president doesn't drink at all, but he probably has like a cigar rolling around, just came back from the golf course and sitting there. He used to wheeling and dealing on the real estate markets, buying different lands in like Scotland and Ireland to build golf courses all over the world, really. And he's sitting there and then he just stops. An idea bubble pops up into his head and he's like, you know what we should fucking buy? Goddamn Greenland. We should buy Greenland. And somebody in his office, like, they like slam down and it's like John C. Reilly and Step Brothers where he's like, yep.
Yep.
And they start putting it in a place. I mean, I've had that spot. Remember Kate and Brent, whenever we were in, I don't know if you were there or not, Constance, when we went to Florida and we drove from Jacksonville down to Daytona Beach and we were driving by all those places, all those houses. And we talked about like, if you're a billionaire, you see a house that you really like, would you just go up to it, knock on the door and be like, how much?
Yeah.
I think even if the house not for sale, you see a house that's so beautiful, you're a billionaire, you just got to have it. How much is this fucking house?
Well, they say everyone has a price, right? Even if you're not thinking about selling, if you go to someone with the right number, that's going to at least make them think. It's just a wild thing to think that.
Shout out Demi Moore.
Yes.
Well, the crazy thing here is that President Trump did, he confirmed to the press that, yes, I am interested in buying Greenland.
I think he should do it to every country in the world. No, I think it's awesome. We're in the market to buy France. Why wouldn't we not be?
In reality, Greenland does have a lot of benefits to us, you know, specifically all like the metals that are found there in the earth. But I think he's also concerned about, you know, between the things he does, but he's very concerned, I think, a lot about his legacy. We haven't purchased something since, I think, President Johnson purchased Alaska, and then the only other president to do that was the Louisiana purchase by Jefferson. So, go ahead.
We did buy the Virgin Islands from, and because people don't realize Greenland is an autonomous country loosely controlled by Denmark.
Yeah.
So they kind of run their own ship, but ultimately they fall under the Kingdom of Denmark. And both Greenland and Denmark have said, what the fuck? I hope this is a joke. We're absolutely not for sale. And we are very much our own country. This is extremely insulting to us. But also
grow up. Stop trying to be a trigger little bitch, Denmark.
But we did buy the Virgin Islands from Denmark a while back, and President Truman also tried to buy Greenland in 1946. He tried to buy Greenland from Denmark for $100 million in 1946.
Wow.
That's actually the second time the United States has tried to buy Greenland. So
we're
going to
get that shit eventually. Greenland, we're coming for your ass.
The prize for a hot minute. And it's just ridiculous. It's 118,000. It's a huge 118,000 miles around. It has only
twice the size of the United States.
Only 56,000 people on it, though, about. So.
Is it really twice the size of the United States?
Yep.
Those damn American maps strike again.
Yeah, man. That scale on the maps just screw you all up.
So also, Greenland is the white one, and Iceland is the green one on the map. Very confusing.
Very true. If we bought Greenland, would it become the 51st state, or would it be like a controlled territory like Puerto Rico and Guam?
Yeah, it'd be like a territory. Like
you guys are doing it too. We're not going to buy Greenland.
I want to buy Greenland.
I kind of want it.
I want to buy it. Like
I want to buy it.
There is a tweet that I saw that said that Denmark was responding. One of their political officials responded, like, honestly, we should buy America because they're in so much debt.
Right,
we're in $22 trillion of debt. I think we should sell ourselves to Denmark for nothing. You take all of our debt. We will operate just like Greenland does autonomously, but you take on our debt. We'll do what we normally do. You take the $22 trillion. We'll call it even. We'll fly your flag alongside of us and just be done with it.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, if we don't have debt, we have every – can you imagine
free
how
college.
Non-contentious American politics would be if we wiped away all of our debt? We could have all the health care paid for, all college paid for. We'd have enough money for national defense and do all that stuff. And then Denmark would be fucked. Big time fucked.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think is more likely, that we sell ourselves or that we buy Greenland?
I think neither are likely, but I hope we buy I hope we buy Greenland just because it'd be like, hell yeah. Because then, if it's twice the size of the United States, would we then become the largest country in the world? Which I think if President Trump achieve that, he would be so. Imagine how many tweets there would be if Trump made not only the most powerful, but we are now the biggest as well.
Also, with global warming coming around the bend, it's right now it's frozen up there, but by the time everything falls apart, we'll have a nice little like beach city up there, you know?
Not to mention what it would do for our bottled water industry. Having melted glacier runoff water, we could sell that for like $6 a pop.
Evian would cost a nickel, you know?
True. Excellent point, Kate.
Thank you.
What else? All right, let's just play pretend here for a second. What are some other places you think we should buy? Besides, if we don't buy Greenland, where else should we buy?
Kate, we'll start with you.
I refuse. This is way too American. This is conversation.
All right,
that's fine. I'll go first. You know, you mentioned the U.S. Virgin Islands. Those are great. I think we should take the British Virgin Islands, not for any other reason than just to stick it to Britain, because mm-hmm. we like messing with them and getting them all riled up. Not to, and they're gorgeous, and it increases our tourism. It's win-win all around.
I think we should buy both the North Pole and the South Pole, Antarctica and everything that's up in the Nordic part, where we can just hang out and buy both. So then we can say that we are the meat. America is the meat in between our global sandwich.
Yes.
That I'm cool with for sure.
So doing actually a little research, I didn't realize how many Air Force bases, and I think NASA has some people stationed up in Greenland as well. Did you guys know that?
Oh, we're everywhere, man. We're everywhere.
That's fantastic. I can't wait till we buy Greenland. It's going to be a great day.
Stop. You guys are the worst.
Make Greenland great again.
if not for no other reason now, I want to get Greenland just to annoy Kate.
I'm never going to visit you.
Yes, you will. You will go there in a heartbeat, and you will get Greenland on a necklace and wear it proudly. You'll be the official Barcelona Sports Greenland news
correspondent.
Journalist. Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Maybe I will, because I like cold weather. So that would be nice.
Relocate the fam.
All right, let's move on to Save Round's Alibis. What do we got?
Great, great, great song by Zach Brown Band, Colder Weather. Great song. So two things real quick. Shout out to Tyler Reddick, who won at Bristol on Saturday night. He is the NASCAR driver who wears the Saturdays Are for the Boys helmet. And I saw pictures of him with Dave in the winner circle.
Does that guy win every race?
He's very good.
He wins every race.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
If for those who don't remember, he was in the car when I was driving and nearly killed him. I think that was what people are saying propelled him to this historic run that he's currently having. And then also, so I was down the shore this week, and this was relevant because we're talking about the burn pits and chemicals and how you shouldn't ingest those. So I love being at my parents' house because my parents' fridge just always has great food in it. No matter what time of the day, there's good leftovers, there's good fruit. There's just – my mom keeps it ready to rock at all times. So I was eating a late lunch on Friday, and she makes this pasta salad that I really, really like. She's been making it for decades now, and I can eat the entire thing by myself if I want to. But so I was putting it back, and there was about maybe a little bowl worth of pasta left, and I – put it on the shelf and I let it go, but it wasn't on the shelf. So it fell out and the pasta went all over the floor. I'm thinking in my head, my mother keeps a very clean house. The floor is not dirty, whatever.
Did you eat the pasta off the floor or what?
I picked the pasta back up and I put it back in the container.
You didn't eat it?
Well, wait. So then I go out and, you know, I have a few pops here and there. I get home, I don't know, whatever time that evening. And I decide I'm going to eat that pasta. And I went and I ate that pasta. Well, turns out my mother had just cleaned the floor, so that pasta was riddled with
cleaning chemicals.
I woke up Saturday morning. I threw up so much.
Oh, it wasn't because you went out. It was because of the floor pasta. Get the fuck out of here.
It was the floor pasta, and I will not hear any differently. So lesson learned, even if your mother keeps a clean floor, don't eat the pasta off the floor.
Well, me and my cousins were hammered once. We heated up leftover spaghetti from pasta night, and we were eating it off the tops of each other's heads, and we were saying, "Sketty head, sketty head." So that's a thing. Anyways, what's your pasta story, Chaps?
This is fucking ridiculous, honestly.
How much do you hate us right now?
Okay, what's your save round?
Literally none. I have nothing.
Kate, are you going to go out and get a Brett Toth Eagles jersey?
I don't know. Maybe. No, Army. No, thanks.
Okay. Mm. Right, well. Kate hates the troops. Continues.
Yep. A Barstool tradition. Bren, what do you got?
No, I'm good.
All right. Same here. We will see you guys back on our normally scheduled program on Thursday. Thanks to everybody who reached out and said that they liked the interview with Tulsi Gabbard, that episode. If you haven't listened, go back and check that one out. And we want to say to all the veterans out there, if somebody asks you to show your DD-214, if they're not an employer, they're not an agent from the United States government, tell them to go fuck themselves. It's on the retreat. Indeed.